This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Let's go now. You fire the first shot. Let's go, man.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at The Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
H-I-T-S, they all stand for try hard. So for the coaches, it's now H is for, hey, don't do that. I is for, I wouldn't do that if I were you. T is for, that's a bad thing to do. And S is for, stop, you're fired.
I don't know if I really look at it that way, Jay.
Jason Leisure with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Jason Leisure is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. And he joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. Hello, Jason Leisure. What's happening?
What's up, Dan? Marshall Harris, nice to see you.
Good to see you as well. We just happy to the Bears are working on getting better as a football team. I think that's the sentiment. We're trying to be optimistic here, Jason. Do you have reasons to be optimistic about Sunday afternoon in that dome?
Yes, for a couple of reasons. The Colts are pretty bad, I think. Not a good defense, especially, and not a good run defense, and lost to DeForest Buckner. So the number one thing the Bears need to do right now is be able to run. So that will help. And I also don't think that they're going to score. The Colts are going to be able to score a lot on the Bears. And it's subtle, but there was some progress in the passing game Sunday night in Houston.
What did you see?
I saw more accurate throws, and I know that that's hard to defend maybe on a day when he threw not just the two interceptions, but the third that was negated by penalty was the worst decision that Caleb Williams has made in two games as a pro, trying to make that throw. That was a red flag to me that he thought he could do that, and that will hopefully be something he learns from. But overall, the passes in general, there were fewer overthrows. It was not a masterpiece by any sense, but there were fewer overthrows. He was better in game two.
I definitely agree with that assessment. I think the whole issue right now is just simply blocking and being able to run the football. I mean, I think it's that simple, especially because, again, who you're going up against, what they've already given up this season as far as the most rushing yards in the NFL through two games, but just the basic concept that if you can't run the football, you're not going to have a good season. I mean, they won the first game off the strength of the defense and the special teams, not because of the offense. And then, of course, you were like, maybe the offense improves a little bit. The passing game looked a little bit better. I think Caleb Williams, you know, C.J. Stroud, one of the things he did say was, you know, it took me till week three or four to even get comfortable. And I think Caleb Williams is capable of making jumps in weeks three and four, especially when you look at these winless teams that they're about to face. So all of that to say, how confident are you that they can correct things in the run blocking aspect or the scheming aspect or just being able to run the football, if you want to keep it simple?
It's a favorable matchup to be able to do it. First off, C.J. Stroud, if he was uncomfortable in his second game last year when he threw for 374 yards.
That's what he said. I'm just telling you what he said.
I would like to be that kind of uncomfortable. C.J. Stroud, you know, while we're on that subject, his rookie season, I think, skewed expectations in a way that Tom Brady kind of skewed expectations for how old a quarterback can still be effective. When Tom Brady plays to 45, now everybody thinks, well, oh, that's the new normal. Everybody can do that. And then they're surprised when Aaron Rodgers breaks down in his late 30s, Drew Brees, all the other guys, this is what they've done. And I don't know if that's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers or if he, you know, found the right crystals he was looking for in New Mexico or whatever, and he's going to have a resurgence. But everybody but Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Peyton Manning, all of these other guys kind of started breaking down and having to use smoke and mirrors to get through their late 30s and then retire. C.J. Stroud's rookie season was so not normal. 374 yards in your second start, not normal at all. And I think he threw for 470 later in that season. He did have some duds in there at times, but I think that has skewed the expectations a little bit for Caleb Williams and everybody else because now, okay, we've seen this is possible with one guy, so now we want everybody to do it. As far as the O-line, Marshall, that's the last thing that anybody usually wants to read about or talk about. But if we can just do a minute on it.
Do you know that for a fact? Do you know that from your from data on your articles?
I know it from my brain, Dan.
You're like Jerry Ryan's.
I didn't know if it was anecdotal or analytical when you said that. But I'm glad. You know what? I appreciate your brain, so I'm going to lean on that.
I sound like the White Sox.
I just said you sound like Jerry Reinsdorf. Yeah. I just know it. And that's the way the Brooklyn Dodgers did it with Eddie Stanky.
Right. But there's bigger picture issues here with the offensive line. There's bigger stories to tell here because you have a team that's run by two former offensive linemen in Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham. And now you look at this offensive line, and there's a lot of trust me on this offensive line. There is one premium resource invested in that starting five, and it's the first round pick that you spent on Darnell Wright. If you look across the board, Braxton Jones is a late round pick. Tevin Jenkins is a converted player from another position, drafted by another overdrafted probably by another administration, who looked like 2 years ago he might not even be around. He might not have a place on the team. Coleman Shelton was a free agent bargain, and Nate Davis was not the top guard in that free agent class, and there have been some things that maybe they didn't expect with Nate Davis. So you're getting a lot of trust me from the two former offensive linemen that are running the team. As it pertains to Caleb Williams, and this doesn't answer your question at all, Marshall, I'm sorry,
because you
asked about the run game, but this is what I want to talk about right now, is every quarterback is going to be in a situation where the defensive ends are on them quickly. No matter what team you play, the defensive ends are good. They're fast. No matter how good your offensive tackles are, they can only hold them off for so long. So the pocket is inevitably going to shrink to your left and right. And what the best quarterbacks do, and what Justin Fields had a hard time doing, but Caleb Williams seems to want to do and seems to be instinctive for him, the best quarterbacks will step up as that pressure comes in from their left and right, never breaking eye contact with the downfield options so that they are able to pounce on it the second that an opportunity arises. When you're caving in the middle of the offensive line as well, that is counteracting what you're coaching Caleb Williams to do. Huh? And now you get into what Justin Fields did and what some other quarterbacks who this doesn't come so naturally to them do, is your instinct is to go further back for more space or to get out to the left or the right for more space. And that's not usually how you're going to win, but it is hard to tell somebody stay in the pocket when their response would be, what pocket?
Not firm enough.
This is the conundrum that they're facing at the moment, which I do believe can be partially alleviated this week for all the reasons that you're saying. I'm not sure why the line is what it is for gambling purposes, because I think the Bears are the better football team and are just meeting the right team at the right time.
But well, again, three points for just having home field advantage, right? Isn't that the rule of thumb?
Generally, yes.
So if it's a 1.5, really,
that would mean the Bears would be a
kind of a toss up. Bears have favored, maybe.
You're probably right. But what matters and what doesn't matter about the DJ Moore sideline exchange?
A few things matter about this. One, the fact that DJ Moore showed some very low-level bad body language, and that caught our attention, tells you what kind of guy DJ Moore is and how DJ Moore is not part of the problem. The fact that it was such a low-level incident that got everyone's attention, and then on top of that, he actually apologized for it. He actually took accountability and said, you know, essentially, to paraphrase, that's not productive, that's not helpful, that makes Caleb's job harder. It tells you, it further evidence, it further reinforces that you have traded for and built around and paid the right guy in DJ Moore. I think that him trying to hit it head on yesterday also indicates that they are very conscious of not letting this season get out of control right now. Things are not going well to start the season. They should very likely be 0-2. The offense isn't great. Caleb Williams has not come along as fast as everybody wanted and thought and hoped. Things can get ugly really fast, or you can take control of things. You can kind of steer it back onto the road and not allow what happened last season, where first in week two, you have the Allen Williams situation. And then in week three, you have Justin Fields saying, oh, the coaching, look at the coaching. And not that he was necessarily wrong about that, but that, I mean, that is hard to come back from when your season starts with some underperformance, some scandal, and some self-inflicted media storm. And it's good to see DJ Moore and Caleb Williams and the Bears in general say, no, we're not sliding back down that same path. We're not, at least we're not going to do that to ourselves again.
Jason, speaking of course correction by quarterbacks, what are your thoughts on not just the way the world reacted to the post-game handshake by CJ Stroud and Caleb Williams, but CJ Stroud then having to go to the podium and address it, which I said when I saw it, Jason, this is not a big deal. Obviously, Caleb Williams is frustrated. They lost the game. He didn't do enough, or he felt like he didn't do enough to help them win the game. And then CJ Stroud is like, hey, vets talk to me. I felt like I needed to talk to him. And, you know, yeah, he has a playoff win. So he has done something. Has he won a Super Bowl? No, but he understands where Caleb Williams is right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Marshall. And that is the more annoying of the two Bears viral video social media things this week to me. Because DJ Moore, as low level as that was, he did what he did. And what they showed, while maybe they showed it more than he liked, or maybe when he saw it on camera, DJ Moore was like, ah, I didn't realize that my body language was so bad. At least that's what he actually did. In the case of Caleb Williams and CJ Stroud, I had the same reaction you did, where I kind of heard about this and then I went and watched the video and I was like, what is the big deal with this? What is the issue here? Caleb Williams, I don't know them to be best friends. They might kind of loosely know each other. He just had a really frustrating game where that ended with him not being able to convert a game-winning drive. And CJ Stroud gave him a nice little pep talk. There was nothing condescending at all about what he said. I can't believe that mushroomed into something. And in fact, you know, you should notice that Caleb Williams was not asked about this yesterday by any of us. It didn't occur to me to watch it or to ask him. I'm sorry. I watched it again right before he came in and I thought, there's nothing here. What would I ask him about this?
But isn't that, Jason, kind of the way it goes with social media, and that it can almost create this tidal wave that then you as a reporter, we as media feel like we need to address it in some way, even though I said it was presented to me and I was just like, nah, it's a non-starter for me.
I still think CJ Stroud was a little out of pocket. I do. Because
all he said was, "You know, go get him, champ."
No,
like you're really good. You're gonna be really good.
More than that, it was it's in you. There was a lot of kind of there's more grandiose stuff like that. Jason, I described it as when on the golf course when my kid gives me unsolicited advice, like, "Dad, shorten your backswing or your feet are misaligned." Like, hey, you know, fine, but if I ask you, tell me. But
if your kid was a golf pro, would you feel the same way?
Well, I mean, he's way better than I am.
No. But if he was an accredited golf pro, would
you feel? Yes, of course. But and I know he's probably right. I know he's probably right. But I didn't ask.
Also, what if your kid was your same age or a year older than you?
Or a month old. There's a month difference between these two guys. Yeah,
it's not his kid.
Yeah, that's yeah. But done things that Caleb Williams not only has not done yet, but aspires to do this season.
I just thought it was a little presumptuous for someone the same age to come over and offer some sage advice from the mountaintop.
Even after you heard CJ Stroud explain himself at the podium, why he did it?
That mitigated it a little
bit. Okay, that's my point.
Yes, but in the moment, I was like, hey, no, he's good.
I think it's so stupid that CJ Stroud had to address this. And if I recall correctly, that video clip was 14 seconds long. So it's a 10-second conversation. The only part probably that caught anyone's attention was that Caleb started to walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Caleb CJ doesn't make the face back. He made, I really think you're even more spot on. This is a non-issue. But the fact that Caleb was annoyed because they lost the game in which he had possession of the ball and was moving down the field, that's what the problem was. He's thinking about the last play that he did not make.
I don't think he was annoyed by CJ Stroud. He was annoyed by everything you just said, Marshall. I mean, how would he possibly be in a good mood after that? And he was not in a good mood in his press conference after the game in Houston, but it wasn't.
And we'd be criticizing him if he were.
That's,
it wasn't an issue that he had with us.
Yeah, but could you imagine
it was that he was upset about the game?
You know how this town goes.
Stroud did not sit there and try to put him through a clinic and act like he knew everything. You know, Caleb, you're not.
If he started pointing to like different parts of the field, hey, like, hey, if you're going here instead of there, then we'd have something to talk about.
Okay. It's not like he tussled his hair.
14 seconds, Dan. 14 seconds.
Don't throw across your body into pressure there, champ, and, you know, tussled his hair a little bit.
That's fair.
It wasn't like that. All he said was encouraging stuff like, hey, you're going to be good. Don't take those hits, meaning, like, I don't want to see you take those hits. You're talented. You're going to be great. He said nothing but affirming and encouraging things. And Caleb Williams' disposition in that moment, I don't think had anything to do with C.J. Stroud. I think it had everything to do with these two games have gone so differently than Caleb Williams thought they would. The start to his NFL career, this is a guy who has had a Tiger Woods-like upbringing in terms of his just total immersion into his sport since age 9. Everything is built to this moment, and you know that he didn't love that debut. 93 yards, less than half his passes completed, even though they did somehow win that game. And he couldn't have liked this one any better, even though there was a little bit of progress. He's thrown interceptions. He's missing on the game-winning drive, and they actually lose. That's not a good time for anyone to talk to him about anything.
It's his first
NFL
loss.
Now, that is the time when the quarterbacks are going to meet at midfield and talk. And I mean, good for C.J. Stroud to say something nice and encouraging to the guy because he doesn't have to do that.
Right. Why should we expect, independent of opponent, is it a reasonable expectation that the Bears' blocking and their running game will improve just because they say they're working on it this week?
No. And this is not a problem. This is a problem that comes up with them and other teams all the time where you get a few weeks into the season and you're, oh, we should fix this. There is no fix personnel-wise. This isn't baseball, basketball, this isn't like there's going to be, I mean, the trade market's been a little more active in football, but there isn't just some, the last few years, but there isn't just some answer. There isn't just some guy to go get. And people are always like, oh, play the backups, play Matt Pryor and play Bill Murray. Like they are backups for a reason.
No.
They are not going to be better as individual players. Sometimes you do that and the fit tends to be better. When they elevated Sam Mustapha to center a few years ago, and then it ultimately didn't go so well. But at the time, it went better because it was a better fit than what they were doing. That's rare. I don't really know how they're going to fix that other than guys playing better.
Jason Leisure, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, Dan, Marshall, see you guys.